Hi, my name's Tash, and I'm an alcoholic.
My name's Caitlin, and I am not an alcoholic, and this is an exploratory podcast looking at alcoholism, addiction, and mental health within the arts, and all the things that make us question,
why am I like this? So we're in my studio today.
Yes.
Instead of our normal recording studio. So yes. We might sound a little different.
Yeah.
There might
be weird background noises.
Yeah, some interruptions. We've got some tradies going on. I had a power outage an hour ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
That's all cool.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Can you, it's been more than a year since I last asked you this, but can you please describe your studio and the space that we're in?
That's really cute. That's like the first conversation we had.
Yeah.
It was a little interview we had in here, and that was one of the first questions you asked me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is sparkly, colourful, chaotic. Every nook and cranny is filled with something interesting. Very hazardous at the moment. Yeah. It's a good time.
It is.
It feels weird recording in here because this is so much like my personal space.
Yeah.
And now I have to do personal chats in it.
Yeah, fair. How's your week been?
What a week. Well, my bank account got shut down for a fraud investigation. The lock of my studio broke and then the door nearly came off the hinge. I started the Fringe weekend. I picked up some extra shifts. Nearly launched my website. I got an earring collab launching this week. Yeah, loads.
Yes.
How's your Fringe week?
I'm already tired. It's been not even a week, and I've seen, I think, seven fringe related things. For context, we are joined by Ruby. Hello. We'll get to you in a second. Work has still been busy, which is nice and good, but it's like I'm busy all the time. I guess I've pretty much moved into my new place. Pretty much, yeah. Every time I, like, decide that, yeah, look, I'll unpack a few boxes, and then I move boxes out of one room, and then the whole thing's a disaster, and I move the boxes back into the room, and everything's okay again.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so
unboxing.
Yeah, well, like, all of last week, I think every night I didn't get home till about, like, 11 o'clock
no,
at night.
No, gross.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
No, thank you. No. So we'll see how I'll check back in 3 weeks. I've seen both a psychologist and a chiropractor, and both of them have been like, we're just going to, like, make you survive this month.
Yeah,
and I was
hectic.
Like, thank you very much for this. So I'm surviving.
I'm a survivor.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it.
Yes.
Yeah.
How's your week been, Ruby?
Yeah, this is Ruby. Not so silent leaving with us in the studio today. Mm. Ruby, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes.
Do I have to?
Yes, I'm Ruby, obviously. I'm a friend to both of these lovely humans. I am a disabled queer trans artist and writer.
Yeah. Own it.
Would you say it? I do a lot of social media sort of activism, or just like, yeah, I guess.
Awareness.
Yeah. Awareness, yeah, education, a lot of educating.
Yeah. Resources.
And I'm just very passionate about intersectionality and disabled politics and disability rights and justice and just representation in any form of media of disabled people, particularly disabled fat people, disabled trans people, disabled people of colour. I just think there needs to be much more accurate, authentic, self-directed representation. Yeah.
And how's your week been?
A deep sigh.
Very, very deep sigh.
I don't even know what day is it today? Wednesday?
Yeah.
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Because I'm here. Yes, it is a Wednesday.
Gosh, it's already halfway through the week. I don't even know what I've been doing. I guess I've been doing a lot of artwork lately, a few commissions, which is cool and fun and good.
I love the little camping doodle.
Thanks.
Very cute.
Yeah. I've been doing like a little bit of art for fun lately, which is like
unheard of.
It's a big thing. Yeah. Like, I guess I've definitely experienced a lot of like creative burnout, which I don't know if anyone can relate to creative burnout out there, but it's not fun. So I've been trying to make myself kind of do more creative stuff, which has been nice, which So my week has been that and also resting. I've had like just had a really tired body lately and mind. I've kind of come out of having a few weeks of like busyness, lots of physical and like physical movement and lots of social stuff. So my body and brain has been quite tired, and I think I've probably just come out of like a bit of a depressive episode. So kind of just feeling a little bit flat at the moment.
How did you get yourself doing creative things just for fun again?
Well, I think, like, I always find that when I'm doing creative stuff with other people that are also doing creative stuff, it, I guess, holds me accountable to myself.
Community.
At me. Yeah. Like, I've done a few, like, creative days with my housemates where we've just kind of, like, sat outside at the table doing painting or drawing or whatever, and just like being in that space around people doing creative stuff, and not all of them do creative stuff for their job. So I think having that has been kind of encouraging me just to do art for doing art and not for capitalism. Which has been really nice. I went to Melbourne recently and then I went camping, and just kind of having a break. And being around different people and in different spaces, I don't know, just kind of sparked my enjoyment for making again.
Change of scenery.
Just kind of getting out of my head, and encouragement from other people as well. Like when I did a zine fair a few weeks ago, that really sparked my creativity and my self like confidence as well, because other people were like responding really well to my work and my art, and just seeing them doing their stuff. I don't know about you guys, but like when I'm around other creative people doing creative stuff, it can go two ways. It can go, oh, I am terrible at what I do, and I just like instantly like really really deeply compare myself. Or I'm like, wow, this is really fun, this is giving me some great ideas, I want to collaborate with these people. It makes me want to go home and do all the work. So it can like go in those two directions, and thankfully, at this time, it went the second way.
I think I lean towards that direction, but there's been a few times where I've been at, like, poetry nights and, like, sat there and watched other people do their stuff and maybe, like, we can be better than this. And there's almost, like, that competitiveness that comes out. Hasn't produced anything. It's probably not the best way to go about it. But
I feel like I do both all the time.
Oh, me too, yeah.
Because I constantly want to be surrounded by other creatives. And then as soon as I am, I want my own space again. I don't want to be able to do what I want without anyone around.
But, like, how do you do that? This is an issue I come up with. So on Monday, all my brain wanted to do was write, but I just, like, couldn't. So I ended up emailing 30 different people to get fringe interviews. And a part of me did that out of guilt of not doing things that I, like, should be doing, quote unquote. And then also finding that, like, I had no inspiration. So how do you, like, handle feelings of, like, that guilt of why would I be doing this when I should be doing all the 20 billion different things?
I love that topic of should be doing.
I have a lot of things to say about this topic.
Ruby dragged me last week.
I did not.
I was in here sweating.
I firmly encouraged. And yes, it was a pretty intense conversation. I acknowledge that.
I walked away and I was like, I don't think anyone has spoken to me like that in a very, very, very long time. Ooh. And I was also
in,
like,
a bad way?
No, in a way that I was like, holy shit, that's how I talk to people. Is everyone okay?
I went away from that and I was like, oh my god, what have I done? Is Tash okay? Like, oh my god, have I done like real damage?
Oh my god, it's not damage. I just like, and this is how it all started.
Yeah.
You know, what should you be doing? What should, you know, as a society, all of the things we think we have to do and when we think we have to do them and how much more we think we have to do, like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, this is where we arrive at the intersection of capitalism and ableism.
Okay.
And I think the, like, commodification and, like, commercialization of creative practice in that, like, but not even just creative practice, but this idea that you have worth and value as long as you are producing, you're contributing to society in a meaningful, tangible way. And this word should.
Yeah.
Like, what should you be doing? And the glorification, I guess, and romanticizing of busyness.
Yeah.
Generally. As like, I'm so busy.
Hustle.
Go get it, girl. But like, I think, from my perspective as a disabled creative, like, I can't do that.
Mm.
I can't do that because of my body.
Yeah.
And that's been, like, a huge learning curve of, like, learning my own capacity of my body and then having those internalized thoughts of, like, okay, well, that means society doesn't really value me because I can't contribute in the same way, in a tangible way, in the way that we're told that we should be.
Yeah.
And that has a lot for me to do with ableism as well and people's perspectives of disabled people and the worth and the value that disabled people have. So that's a big thing for me, kind of unlearning that and working with that. It's hard, but yeah, that's just my own experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something we talked about a little bit.
Yeah, because I can't understand... Oh, I can't accept that I'm, I don't even want to say the word can't. Like, I don't accept that I have to stop and have to slow down because of my body or because of my mental health or because of these things that are physically standing in my way.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about them.
Yeah.
And I just refuse. I'm just straight up refusing. And I was saying to Ruby, I was like, oh, what, why am I like this? It's a... internalized ableism and you think you have to do all of the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you push yourself to do all the things. And obviously I'm in a situation where I think you said a really poignant thing there about romanticizing busyness. And I think I'm so guilty of that, of sort of promoting my busyness and my hectic schedule and my frantic life as something that's really positive. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's not positive all the time. Like, that's how I became an alcoholic. Like, that's, well, it's not why, but you know, it's a part of it. And there's so much involved in it. It's like, why stop when you can work?
Yeah. And I think that kind of stuff is so tricky to unlearn, in particular because it's so reinforced everywhere. It's just kind of like, it's a normal thing. It's a normal conversation to have with people, like, oh, what are you doing this week? Oh, I'm like so busy. Or like, I'm just like surviving on coffee and no sleep. Lol.
Totally.
And it's like, okay, let's kind of stop and think about that, because like, I think that's a very real thing that disabled people in particular have to think about. And particularly when we're living in a capitalist society as well, like, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we do have to partake in that in a way, because if we want to be able to pay the bills, go to the doctor, buy groceries, you know, like, for me as a disabled creative, like, I have always struggled to maintain or acquire employment because mainstream society doesn't really value disabled input, disabled labour, disabled work lives, basically. And so I've never really had proper.
Yeah, what is quote proper? Unquote, yeah.
But society. I've never had like a typical job.
Yeah.
So I've had to make my own work and my own employment, which is where like creative practices come in and, you know, social media and, you know, online activism and visual arts and stuff. So I've had to, you know, maintain my own employment. So it's that balancing act of like, I need to be unlearning this whole like, where's my capacity at and what I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I still need to pay my rent.
Yeah.
How do you balance that? How do you decide? Yeah. Like, who helps you work out? I guess that's the point. You have to do it on your own, don't you? Like, where your boundaries are and where your limits are.
Mm. Well, it's interesting because, like, I think you're the same as you, Tash, where I sometimes ignore those boundaries. Like, the amount of times I've said, I can't afford to be sick. Like, I literally cannot afford to be sick right now. Or, like, choosing to ignore the fact that my body does need to stay in bed all day because my legs aren't feeling okay because of endometriosis, but still pushing myself to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And just that, like, you're destroying yourself in an attempt to meet standards that aren't sustainable.
It's so frustrating because I feel like I was just raised on such, like, a tough love, go get it attitude. And again, I just keep coming back to the same thing where I'm like, I get it. And this is what I said to Ruby. I hear you. I understand you. What you're saying makes sense, but still no. Yeah.
But it's easier said than done too. Yeah. Like, it's, of course it's easy for me to say that.
Mm.
I don't practice that all the time.
Yeah.
But I think also too, we both have like different experiences of chronic illness and disability and our bodies and all of that kind of stuff. I've had, you know, 25 years of my life of knowing that I have a physical disability that is just a part of my everyday existence. So I've had 25 years of learning, internalizing, unlearning, you know, this stuff. But I think, like, for a lot of disabled people, like, there isn't the option of, like, forcing ourselves to get out of bed to go and do something because we can't afford to be sick or whatever, because, like, we literally cannot. And so I think, just, like, different experiences, I guess. Yeah.
And what happens then, I guess, emotionally for you on those days that you literally can't get up and you're not going to do the thing that you were going to do? I'm sure there's the whole heap of guilt and emotions that go with that as well.
Yeah, there are. But those days aren't necessarily days which are out of the ordinary, because I think at some point every day has some part of the day where I'm not able to do a thing that I had wanted to do. Every day. It's not like a rare occurrence, or it's not like an occasional, like, once a week thing. This is like an everyday part of my life. So there are, I think it fluctuates with my own mental health too. Like, you know, if I'm in a really good headspace, I'm able to kind of recognize the internalized thoughts when they're popping up and kind of acknowledge them and think about them and move through that.
Yeah.
But then other days I will have, you know, those moments where I'm like, oh, I'm terrible and, you know, I have no worth and no value and I should be doing this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like this deep, intense sadness and frustration and loneliness. Because there, you know, there's social isolation associated with a lot of this stuff too, with, you know, with disability and ableism and access and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So that busyness isn't just about work for me. It's about social stuff too, because, you know, there's this whole thing of like FOMO or fear of missing out. I saw a really great tweet recently, which was like, for a lot of people with chronic illness and disability, FOMO is actually not fear of missing out. It's actually missing out. And that's just a part of our lives quite often. And obviously I don't want to speak on behalf of the entire chronically ill and disabled community. I am one disabled person. So every single disabled person's experiences are going to be different and unique. But there are a lot of similarities often which we share. So it's something that it encompasses and comes into play in every aspect of my life, because I'm having to kind of choose between, like, what do I have energy for today? And if I have a doctor's appointment or something, it means that I might have to then miss out on a social activity later on, which feeds into me not having time or capacity to be around friends and community, which, you know, feeds into social isolation, which feeds into mental health. And it kind of just goes in a big
vicious cycle.
So
yeah
I don't even know if I answered your question.
No, I,
but like it kind of,
you did
it's not, it's, but these are all questions as well that there isn't a definite black and white answer as well, you know,
things change
all it's an time. Ongoing thing, it's a fluctuating thing, and it's not a linear thing too, it doesn't go forward and up,
yeah,
you know.
It's interesting talking about FOMO because I've been thinking about my own FOMO at the moment with Adelaide Fringe going on.
Big thing.
Well, I keep seeing all of my friends at, you know, RCC and at these party venues.
Yep.
At these awesome, cool nightclubs, doing cool shots with their cool friends, you know. I am seriously, genuinely jealous, and okay. I'm annoyed that I'm jealous, and I don't want to be, and I don't want to have FOMO, but I really want to be there, and I really want to be in the culture and doing the drinks and having all the lols and being part of it. And I feel like I can't, because if I went, I would have to be sober, and that's such a buzzkill. Well, I don't have a choice in that. Like, I would have to be sober, and I feel like it wouldn't be fun because I would just end up hating everyone that was drunk, and so then I don't want to go. I find it doesn't bother me anywhere near as much as it is during this Fringe season so far. Maybe it's just all the photos and all the videos that make everything look so much more.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like I'm missing out on loads.
Yeah. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like you need to learn that you don't have to be drunk to have fun at those events.
That cannot be true. Like,
I've done events like that sober. I did it sober this weekend. Like, yeah, I did wonder.
I think you'd probably find more people have that in common with you than you think. Like, there would probably be more sober people there than you might think.
And what do you do?
You do the exact same thing. You just intoxicated. I mean,
to be honest, I don't know because I can't access those spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
So I relate very strongly to this in a slightly different way, and it's not about being sober. It's about access.
Being there at
all. So Fringe time is particularly fragile time for me as well because, I mean, I feel this all the time throughout the whole year.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, social media can sometimes be a really triggering place for me because I see people, like you said, like, posting videos and photos of them, like, having an amazing time and being like, everyone come. And it's like, okay, like, but who are you directing that at? Because not everyone can come.
Yeah.
Whether they're sober, whether they're disabled, whether they don't feel safe in those spaces because of, you know, queerness or being trans or,
race,
you know.
Yeah.
All, yeah, exactly. You know, all of these different layers. And, yeah, Fringe time is a tricky mental health time for me, I think. It's kind of like my usual feelings on, like, some weekends amplified for a whole month.
Constant reminding.
Yeah, because people are, you know, posting all of these things and, like, I'm like, cool, that looks fun. And then the venue's not accessible or the venue uses strobe lighting and my best friend can't get in or the venue's accessible but there's no accessible toilet or it's so crowded that I wouldn't be able to move at all if even if I went.
Yeah.
Or I would put up with so much ableist bullshit the whole time I'm there that it's
outweighs.
It's just kind of destroys the fun in the process.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the last time I went to a bar and wasn't condescendingly high-fived by a drunk dude for being there.
Oh.
Or drunk girls that are like, oh my god, you're so amazing. Like, I'm so happy that you're here. And I'm like, I don't know you.
Yeah.
Like, what, you're just proud of me for leaving the house because I look like this? Get fucked.
Caitlin and I recoiled in horror for the podcast listeners there. Let's grab my friend. Yes, Fringe, very difficult.
Because, like, we are technically an arts, capital A arts podcast, not even a capital A arts. I don't understand the difference between capital A arts and arts. I think it's silly.
Wait, what?
I'm getting to a point.
Okay.
I want to know how your art, if it does intersect with all of that, that we've talked about in the last, like, half hour.
With access and ableism.
Yeah.
Well, I think that my experience with that stuff is, like, informs every part of my existence.
Yeah.
So I can't separate anything from it because my disabled identity is part of everything. My queer identity is part of everything. And with it follows my experience of ableism. So that definitely informs my art 100%. Mm. Like, it just does. Whether or not it's overtly, you know, shown in my work. But quite often, I think, like, I'll make art and a lot of other disabled people will relate to it in some way or another. Even if it's just from the perspective of disabled representation in art.
Yeah.
Or disabled bodies being represented in visual arts. You know, seeing disabled bodies being drawn. Or photos of disabled bodies. So, yeah, definitely informs my art. And I mean, it also, you know, it informs my writing and a lot of the stuff that I post on social media. Which, you know, is often in the form of angry rants. But like,
angry rants,
nothing has ever changed from politeness.
Wow. Before, you've just fallen quite nicely into this, talking about you as a writer, before you struggled quite a lot to identify as a writer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Tell me about that. As someone who probably feels the exact same and also has done it on this podcast in the exact same way.
Yes. Writer.
I mean, I very rarely get paid for work.
Yeah.
Yeah, in general, you know. Especially writing. Yeah. So I think maybe that's one internalized, you know, idea that I have in my head of, like, to be a writer, you need to be paid for it, which is bullshit. Yeah. To be a writer, you just need to write.
Mm-hmm.
And writing can look an infinite number of different ways. Yeah. You know, it doesn't even have to be written words. Writing can take many different forms. You know, it can be verbal, it can be sign language, it can be, like, there's so many different forms of communication, and this is where the speech pathologist in me is coming out. But I don't know, I think I was having this conversation with someone recently as well about me being hesitant or not sure about identifying, like, as an activist, because I think, you know, and writing and stuff might fall into it. I think, like, many marginalized people, particularly Black and Indigenous people, disabled people, trans people, and people from multiple marginalized backgrounds, they fall into, like, our lives are political by default.
Yeah.
By necessity and out of a, you know, requirement for survival.
Mm.
So a lot of the work that I do was never work. It was literally just for me to have my needs met. To have basic human rights, and it kind of fell into the category of activism, I guess. So a lot of the stuff I'm talking about and writing about are informed by my experiences of real ableism in the world and my very real work that I have done to try and have access to equipment and healthcare and therapy and access to buildings and calling people out on ableism. That's all stuff that's just been a part of my everyday existence for as long as I can remember. So I find it hard to see that as work because it's my life.
Yeah.
It's my everyday life. It's my existence. It's just a normal part of my
identity.
You know, my identity and ability to move through the world. And somehow along the way, other people started to read and see what I was sharing about those everyday experiences and be like, oh, we enjoy this, or we relate to this, or we appreciate this work. And I was like, oh, it's work. Okay. But they're not seeing that behind the scenes, that's actually just like informing every part of my life. So I kind of just struggled to kind of take that across of, like, me just, like, sharing my experiences with that stuff and realize, oh, I'm writing about it. It's not just sharing, I'm writing, you know. That's, so I think that's where it comes in, you know. So I think there's a lot of pressure that's placed on marginalized people to engage in activism just purely because they are marginalized people, which is bullshit, because I don't have to do any of this if I don't want to. I don't have to educate anyone. I don't have to do any of this activism stuff. But I do it because of necessity and survival, and it just so happens that I want to share it with other people. But there are lots of multiply marginalized folks that don't engage in this stuff because they're busy using their energy to do it in real life to inform their very real movement through this world. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I, like, struggle to associate with those terms. And I guess, too, as well, like, there's definitely internalized ableism associated with that, of like, again, representation, disabled writers, and what that looks like, what it should look like, and who should be doing it, air quotes, you know. So comparison, self-doubt, self-worth, ableism, you know.
Those fun things.
Yeah, fun, favourite, lovely things that I love. Yep.
So Ruby and I had a chat last week about needing to take breaks and recognising that, et cetera, et cetera. I felt like I got told off.
I'm sorry.
No. As like I said, nobody really talks to me like that. And I think,
like, what? Because it, yeah, to okay. people listening, they could, they're probably like, oh my god, Ruby was just yelling at Tash.
Yeah.
I wasn't, to be clear.
Just, I guess, point those really pointed questions, like, what would you say if it was me?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, but that's not, that's, yeah, Caitlin laughing. Just all these kind of questions that were really uncomfortable because the answer was annoyingly obvious and the answer was always the opposite of what I was doing. Just like those really, just getting called out basically for my bad self-care behavior and my that's how it felt. And my inability to want to turn off and to why that was.
But I think too, it's not about you doing something wrong or something badly. It's just about like recognizing the language that you're using to describe yourself and your, you know, should and shouldn'ts and all of that kind of stuff. And recognizing the part that internalized stuff, whether that's ableism or otherwise, is playing in that.
Yeah.
And I think like some of the things that I was saying touched a nerve or two, but like, because it's uncomfortable to talk about, and it's especially uncomfortable to realize it and notice it within yourself. And when someone's like pointing that out in you in a loving way, firm way, that can be an incredibly uncomfortable and like confronting conversation, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry if you felt like you were being told off.
No,
I was definitely coming from a place of pure like concern and care.
Yeah,
and wanting to like, I guess, but even to like sharing my own experience and perhaps you recognizing your own experiences in some of that.
Yeah,
and being like, oh, that's me.
And I think that's a lot of what it was, and that was annoying. Because, you know, we talked about it again, like the Russian dolls of trauma, everything is fucking trauma. And it's just, that is just getting really old, you know?
It's not enjoyable.
I'm just getting really sick of that.
I think one thing I said was, it's one thing that you can't cover with glitter.
Yeah. I was upset about that too.
I am
bloody trying.
The thing though, like you can't sugarcoat ableism's not pretty.
No.
Yeah. Whether it's internal or not.
Yeah.
It's not a pretty thing. It's shit. And it's especially shit if you're realizing that it's also happening to come from within your own self.
Mm. Yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah.
And it feels like something I should have known, you know?
Mm.
And I guess that's the point, it's internalized.
Mm.
Yeah. And then so you helped me decide on a day that I was going to do just me things. It was going to be a me day and I was going to... And
a day off that didn't involve work or anyone else.
Yeah. And it took us a long time to brainstorm what that looked like because I didn't know what I did for fun. I was like, I don't know. I want to work, or I want to talk to other people. Yeah. I want to set something up. So we like brainstormed some things, and then the morning, in the next couple of days after that day off, I was really, to the day off, I was really pumped about it. And I was like, yeah, like, we're gonna have this fucking me day, no one's gonna make me do shit, like, fuck yeah. And then I woke up in the morning, and I think it was like 7 o'clock in the morning or something, and I messaged Ruby. I was like, hello, I'm terrified, I cannot do this. And I felt like a real panic. Like, what was I gonna do with my day? Like, surely I should go to work, you know? And we sort of had a bit of a chat, and Ruby just reminded me to slow down a bit. and plan my day and just reminded me of the plan that we had, you know, and kind of reinforced why we were doing those things and why I liked those things and what I was going to do. And I was like, oh yeah, like I totally had forgotten all of the things, all of the great plans that we'd made.
I think you got a bit overwhelmed because you were saying about like, I just can't cope with not having a plan. And I was like, well, hang on a second. There's a lot of pressure on us to feel like fun things have to be spontaneous and not planned at all.
Yeah. But
that's total bullshit. Oh, yeah. That's total bullshit. Like, you are allowed to plan and schedule leisure time. Yeah. And a lot of people do it. I have to do it by necessity. Yeah. I have to plan everything in my life around access. So it comes much more naturally to me than other people. But, like, we're taught, like, you can have a plan for all these things, but fun stuff should just be, like, spontaneous and just come out of nowhere.
Crazy.
But, like, sometimes you actually, you're allowed to sit down and be like, okay, I want to do this fun thing. I want to do this. And this is the order that we're going to do it in. And that's so okay.
Yeah.
And I think once we, like, talked about that, you were like, oh, I felt so much better.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And the only thing I didn't do was go to the beach because the weather wasn't good enough. And then in lieu of going swimming, I had a nap, which
great.
I felt like that was pretty difficult, though. Like, when I was deciding to have the nap, I was sort of laying, oh, my eyes really want to close.
Yep.
I was going, but you said you were going to go swimming. Like, you should go swimming on your day off. And then I was sort of mentally preparing myself to do that. And I was like, I don't think I actually want, I don't know what I want to do. And I had like another bit of a meltdown about it. And I was like, I want to go to sleep, you know. Yeah.
I'm proud of you for listening to what your body was telling you in that moment. Because that's really hard to do, especially, you know, in light of everything we've been talking about, like feeling like you need to be doing something at all times, like allowing your body to have a rest when it says, hey, I want to rest, and being like, yeah, we're going to do that.
And then, I mean, even those moments though, I'm going, yeah, we should have a rest. And then there's the other part going, you wouldn't need this rest if you'd gone swimming and done hydrotherapy but the week before, or you wouldn't need a rest now, you know, like it. I'd or punish
like,
what myself.
Should we be doing instead of resting?
Yeah.
Like we're gonna get behind on all of this other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel like it's constantly a game of trying to get ahead and trying to like almost like stockpiling time. You know, like if I can do everything I really need to do in this one day really quickly, then I'll have free time later on. But then you fill up your free time because you don't want any gaps, and so then you're doing like twice or triple the amount of work. And Caitlin's sitting here very quietly, but you are.
Because we talked about this last week, and the reason that I do all of that is because I'm clearly avoiding being vulnerable with people, and there's some deep-seated issues there. And for me, filling up that time is avoidance. So it's avoiding listening to my body. It's avoiding people. It's avoiding whatever, whatever, whatever.
There's a very fine line between destruction and avoidance, isn't there?
Yeah. What I want to know, and I doubt any of us have the answer, is how to not be doing that. Like, how to actually take that time and how to start unraveling some of that internalized ableism and all those things that we should be working towards. No, I needed to cut should out of my vocabulary.
We need like a buzzer.
But see, that's that's growth right there. Like, you just noticed that you've used that word and you've been like, oh, maybe we can use a different word in there.
That's a good point.
Like, that's like just starting to be more self-aware about this stuff of like, how do we talk to and about ourselves? What language are we using that's perhaps rooted in ableism?
Yeah,
noticing that so that we can, like, you can't change something that you're not aware of.
No.
So like, that awareness is probably the first thing.
Yeah, cool. You know,
but like, I don't know, I guess I have a different relationship with resting too, because I quite often just have to rest because of my body and don't have a choice, because I won't be able to engage in anything else if I don't. But there are so many other feelings, internalized stuff, and like guilt and shame associated with that too sometimes, of like, oh, I shouldn't be resting, or like, I've wasted a whole day and I haven't done anything. I haven't even gotten out of bed. It's a process. Like, you can't unlearn that and stop doing that overnight, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just going back to that idea of like, there is your value and your worth is not defined by your productivity, and reminding yourself of that.
Yeah.
Your value, you hold inherent value regardless of what you're producing and giving to the world.
What are you then? Like, I understand that that's kind of the point.
But yeah.
But that is sort of a serious question. Like, if you're not all of the things, then... See, and this is when I get to, like, an existential crisis. Because I go, like, if I'm not what I make, then what is the point of making? Then what is the point of being? And what is the, like, what is the point?
And again, those questions are not questions that anyone can, that I can answer.
Oh. Yeah.
But, like, you have to think about, like, you know, that is inherent stuff that is deeply, deeply rooted in ableism.
Yeah.
Because it's this idea that... And it also ties in with eugenics. I'm going to bring it to eugenics.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to bring it to this idea of that it is rooted in eugenics too, because it's this idea that, oh, this disabled person is not going to be able to contribute in any way to our society that we think is valuable
yeah.
and important, because they're not going to be able to communicate, they're not going to be able to work, they're not going to have relationships, so they shouldn't be alive.
Mm.
They shouldn't be allowed to live, and it would be kinder for us to remove them from this world. So I think we need to think about where that thinking comes from,
because
that ties in with that stuff, you know, and all of this stuff, I guess, you know, it's important to think about the intersections of disability and race and gender and all of that kind of stuff as well, because that all comes into play as well, and ableism quite often goes hand in hand with white supremacy and colonization and transphobia and fatphobia. True. Like, it all ties in together.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where a lot of that thinking, like, it informs it and is informed by it.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is, like, it seems really, really excessive and over the top, but, like, when you bring it down, you strip it down to its bare form, that's like where we're at here.
Yeah.
You know? No,
yes.
Definitely. Because it's that whole thing of like, well, what's the point in me existing if I'm not contributing in this meaningful way to society? Yeah. Because society has already deemed what is meaningful and what it looks like and who is, you know, doing it.
What are some meaningful things that you both feel like you bring to the world that are not handmade or based on your jobs?
Kindness.
Oh.
I think I'm a kind person.
You are.
Yeah. My initial reaction to that was, oh, I don't know, my brain needs to unravel a lot of things.
See?
It's a tricky thing to talk about.
Yeah, and I have a lot of issues with the worth that I place on the work that I do and the work that I give, because a lot of it isn't physical, which is a thing in the arts. Like, there's no physical, tangible thing.
Yep.
Tangible is a much better word.
Yeah.
But it, like you've said, I don't fucking know. Passion, maybe? I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go with that. So I sit here very unconsciously.
Yeah.
Very unsure. What about you?
I well, the thing about this is that all of the positive things that I'm thinking of seem like lies. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, I want to say, like, community. But then I wonder, and this is like me convincing Ruby that I've manifested Ehlers Danlos syndrome.
But you don't have to convince anyone of anything, and you don't owe anyone shit.
But I should know, like, I should do a thing. Like, I feel like none of the things that I do are real. This is getting so existential. I just mean, like, okay, like a Stitch and Bitch, for example.
Okay.
Right? I want to believe that I do, that I run Stitch and Bitches because I value the creative community in Adelaide, and I want to create a place that is accessible, intersectional, welcoming for everybody.
Uh-huh.
And I want those people to form a community. That's what I want to believe, and that's what I think.
Yeah.
But then is it really human selfishness? And do I really just want to have people hang out in my studio with me? Like, probably not, but also maybe. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like I can't trust any of my judgments or choices or why I do things. Like, what is the root, you know? Like, I feel like a sociopath sometimes. Like, does anyone understand what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. It's just...
And, like, with Annie as well. Like, do I want Annie to be, like, happy and healthy and better adjusted and more capable and less traumatized for Annie because I want that for her? Or do I subconsciously just want all those things so that I have a better partner? Like, can it be both? Oh, it's also stressful. Like, this is what I'm saying. This is what every single choice in my life revolves. Yeah. Every single thing I think about myself is this.
That's so valid. And it's so, like, it's so valid to have these, like, really, really complex thoughts because nothing about this is black and white and nothing about this is, like, has a defined line.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's so valid that you have these complex, terrifying thoughts.
Mm.
But, like, it's, again, like, not questions that can necessarily be answered in a like podcast conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it's because everything is trauma. So I feel like it's trauma as well, where it's like, I look at our past ex, who I would describe as a narcissist and a complete manipulator, and I look at some of her behaviors and I go, that all seemed really normal at the time. Mm. You know, like, that all seemed super legit and I bought into that at the time. I guess I'm afraid that I'm buying into my own bullshit and that maybe it's just that, like, internal voice, isn't it, that's just like a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, the thing that I'm doing is fine.
Uh-huh.
But then the dick voice is like, but is it? I asked to give the positive, what positive thing do you give that is not
work-related?
Work-related. Which, and you said,
yeah,
passion, and you said kindness, and I had an existential crisis. And then I'm going to say, I give confidence to others to be brighter.
Yes.
Yes.
I think you're very, like, supportive. You're very supportive and encouraging of other people. And it's also okay to not know those things or be unsure and, you know, because that's all of that internalized stuff there, being like, oh, no, I'm shit.
Yes.
I don't have anything to offer. Who was there and was like, okay, to be a part, to pass as a human, you have to offer something? What about those mediocre, cishet, white, non-disabled dudes that do shit all?
So unfair.
Yeah. What about them? They don't have to do anything and they get paid. They get every opportunity given to them.
Think about it.
They have to do literally nothing to move through life with perfect ease, having their needs met in every single room that they enter.
Can you imagine?
No, I physically cannot imagine. I cannot imagine. So let's just, like, have a bit of perspective here.
Yeah. I guess everything is fine.
But it's, do you know, also, what? No, it's also okay if it's not fucking fine at all.
But 100%. But also, Ruby, you gave me this great little gem the other day.
Did
of,
I?
Yeah, you gave me a lot of gems actually.
Thanks.
But this, it was truly formative. But this little one of everything is the exact same.
Is that your one of the week?
Oh, that is my one of the week. That is my quote of the week. Nothing's changed. That is, nothing's changed.
Okay.
Because we sort of had these big chats and I freaked my shit and whatever. And then Ruby just kept reminding me that nothing has actually changed.
In this space of time that we have been discussing these really in-depth, intense conversations. Like, you're still the same you.
Mm.
You might be feeling some really intense, terrifying, scary, overwhelming feelings, but nothing has changed. Like, you're still here existing. You're still you. There's still noises outside. People are still, the world is still turning. Like, nothing's changed.
Yeah. It's a good reminder.
Yeah.
It was very helpful to me and has been over the last week or so.
Yeah.
Helpful for that very specific context, I think. Like, yeah. But I just mean, I was just meaning, like, in that very specific period of time when we're having a very intense conversation and, like, realizing these really overwhelming things and having some really intense feelings. Like, you're still here. You're still you. You're still existing in this. And this has only been a period of, like, 30 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it can feel like so much bigger and more intense than that.
Yeah.
But you're just sitting here in this room. You're still you. You're still hearing the same sounds, which need to
same annoying sounds.
It's been months. Can you imagine how I feel?
Oh.
Look, today has been another full-on discussion with Ruby.
That felt pointed.
I love you very much. I love you too. You bring a lot to my life, and I'm certainly at a point now where I miss you when you're not around.
Aww,
and
thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoy talking to you and having your opinions, and I really appreciate how real you are.
Thank you. Yeah. It means a lot to hear those things, like, verbally said to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't often hear them.
Yeah. Tell your friends you love them.
Expressed.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I love you too, Caitlin.
Thank you. We love you. Thank you. And you can listen back to that. Because it's recorded and we'll go on it. I'm going to do a very quick wrap up. If you would like to support us on Patreon, you can. All the links are in our Instagram bio at... Why am I like this pod? Yeah.
Ruby, do you have a Patreon?
I do, but yeah. It's sort of under construction. As in, like, I've been mentally ill and depressed and not... producing anything.
That's so fine.
At the moment, which is okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've just been like having a time, so I've momentarily not been posting. Cool. Well, I haven't ever really been posting on there.
Well, that's fine. What socials would you like to plug?
I don't know, Instagram. Yeah. Yes.
What are your handles? Just
at Ruby Allegra, but with a V instead of a U.
Yes.
And Ruby the artist, same spelling of Ruby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's...
You can email us at justwhypod@gmail.com. If you've got any feedback on any episodes, maybe how they made you feel, what you want to talk about, whatever, please email us. Do not slide into my DMs.
Oh, no.
I cannot stress this enough. I think I'm just going to have to put a little auto reply on that's like, please email us.
Yeah.
So that Caitlin can vet those for me.
Look, I'm partial to a DM slide, so feel free to slide if you want to, but like, not about work.
Don't at me. At Caitlin, or why am I like this on Twitter? Or we tweet occasionally. I occasionally tweet.
I've just got back into Twitter.
Yeah, there you go.
I feel like a dad learning how to use like... a really new piece of technology. Yeah. And I'm like, what is this thing?
Right. Maybe we'll tweet some of Ruby's work after this.
I feel like I'm saying this knowing what I'm about to say. I feel like I need to warn you now that you follow me on Twitter.
Mm.
All I do is retweet and like Star Wars related content.
This is just fine. So you know. I probably won't engage in that.
That's okay. No one does. People are like, you know, Caitlin's been on Twitter because my feed is fucking full of Star Wars stuff. And I'm just like, you're welcome.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
See you guys next week where we will be halfway through The Fringe. We will have some fucking feelings, I'm sure. And it'll just be Caitlin and I chatting about life and stuff. If you got your questions, send them through, yada yada.
Bye.
Bye.
Affected by anything said in this episode, please contact Lifeline at 13 11 14 or www.lifeline.org.au. Why Am I Like This is a Wickedly Good production produced by Caitlin Ellen Moore and hosted by Tash. The audio for this podcast was recorded and edited by Ryan Martin John. The Why Am I Like This jingle was created by Annie Siegman and Ryan Martin John. Why Am I Like This was recorded and produced on Kaurna lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Thanks for listening.